Hello, welcome to the Funds Fanatic weekly podcast. My name is Gavin Lumsden. I'm from Citywire, and today I'm returning to the important subject of the big challenge facing UK equity income and dividend investors from the dividend crisis that we're facing as a result of the coronavirus recession. With me to talk through the difficulties and perhaps the opportunities is William Meaden of JP Morgan Asset Management, who's joining me from Oxfordshire. William, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon. How are you doing? I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, you're the manager. Your main part of your job is managing the JP Morgan Claverhouse Investment Trust. It's a UK equity income trust launched in 1963. So I'm always reassured to see a fund that's been going longer than I have. And it's got a great dividend record, increasing payouts for 47 years, isn't that right? So you're just the kind of person to speak to when we're in the midst of this crisis, when companies right, left and centre have been cutting dividends. I think we're up to over £30 billion have been cut so far. Isn't that right, William?
That's right, yes. There are all sorts of crises. This crisis is like no other, Gavin. But, you know, it's a social crisis, an economic crisis, a health crisis. But it's, for investors, it's also a dividend crisis. And, you know, we expect dividends in the UK market to be down 30, possibly 40% this year. But Claverhouse has this wonderful track record of having put its dividend up every year for 47 years. And it's got the best reserves in the sector, monies that have been tucked away in the good times for arguably times such as this. So it's certainly an objective of the board to increase the dividend every year if it can, and to keep that track record going.
Well, we'll come back to the dividend capacity a bit later, I'm sure. But just, we could start off with the performance. The shares in your investment trust are down around a quarter, about 24% up to the 1st of June this year. And, you know, so are all your rivals. Many UK funds and investment trusts have fallen like that. But what are you saying to your investors? Because that's put a big dent in your longer term performance record, which was looking good.
Well, equity markets, you know, understandably around the world have fallen very sharply at the start of this year, and the UK market, and therefore Claverhouse, was no exception to that. But as you say, Gavin, Claverhouse has been around since 1963. It's seen many ups and downs over the years. It's a very resilient trust. It invests only in the strongest, best companies in the UK, and it's come through all these crises before, and I'm quite confident it will come through this again.
One of the curious things about your share price, about the Claverhouse share price, is that quite often if you'd seen a portfolio slump like that, you might expect the shares to be, you know, have fallen more than the underlying net asset value of the portfolio. But in fact, the shares at the moment are trading on a small premium, 3% above the net asset value. So that's indicating to me that there is demand for the shares. Is that because people are buying, you know, into a bargain? They see, you know, you've fallen a lot, or are they seeing you and funds like you as the kind of last hope for a dividend?
Well, I think there are probably two reasons why the shares are trading at asset value, or very often at a premium. And indeed, we've been issuing stock recently. Firstly, you know, we have a very good shareholder base who look beyond the sort of short-term noise and movements of stock markets and look at the longer term. And if you look at, you know, the record in the 8 years I've been manager, the shares are some 40% ahead of the all-share index since March 12 I came on board. And secondly, and just as importantly, as you say, at this time of dividend crisis, investors want to put the probability on their side that they're going to get some income coming in. And those great reserves that Claverhouse has, I think, is read by investors as meaning that they have a much higher probability of getting income from Claverhouse Investment Trust than from many other sources.
So you've mentioned those reserves a couple of times. So how big are they? How much money has the trust set aside over the years that it can now dip into to boost the dividends?
It's more than a year's worth of reserves. We paid 29p dividend. We're a December year end. We paid 29p in four installments last year, and we have well in excess of 30p in reserves. So we have more than a year's worth of dividends tucked away.
And what has the board said about future dividends in light of the crisis?
Well, it's stated quite clearly in the annual report. We're a trust that aims to increase capital and income, and specifically on the income, on the dividend. The objective of the board is to increase the dividend every year, and over the piece to increase it at least in line and if possible, in ahead of ahead of inflation.
Right. And but what? How long do you think this dividend drought's going to go on for? We had a webinar on income investing recently, there were some of our experts were saying the futures market is forecasting not just cuts this year, but next year as well, and possibly going beyond. What's your view?
I think it's really important as a fund manager to know what you don't know. And there are many, many things in this crisis that we don't know, not least of which is how long it's going to go on for. And frankly, nobody does. Until we get a vaccine for this virus, we can't be fully sure that it's over. I would expect dividends to be down some 30 or 40% this year. And then from then on, it depends how the pandemic plays out. But it's all the more reasons to be investing in companies with great balance sheets, really good cash flow, moats around the business, to just put the probabilities on our side that we're going to be in those companies that can deliver dividends for longer than most.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But you you market yourselves as a fund, a trust that's focusing on Great British dividends. So you invest solely in the UK, is that right?
Just invest solely in the UK, yes, that's right.
Because you say that actually you've got this 47-year record of growing the dividend, which is the longest of the purely UK-focused equity income trusts. You know, others like City of London have got a slightly longer record, but they do invest overseas. I was wondering, though, I mean, at this webinar we had recently, there was a fund manager, global equity income fund manager, making a plausible argument for investing overseas, you know, for the same sort of reasons you're saying, looking for a strong companies who can grow their dividends. But if you invest globally, you've got a bigger stage. Where are the great British dividends going to be found in light of the pandemic?
Well, there are not as many companies in the UK paying dividends as there were this time last year, but that's a global phenomenon. But the pharmaceutical companies, the utility companies are still paying dividends. There are some companies that have prudently chosen, I think, to defer dividends. So the UK house builders, for example, were just on the verge of paying some very substantial dividends. But when the crisis came along, they quite rightly are holding those back. So I think that sort of paradise postponed rather than paradise lost. I expect those dividends, if we continue to come out of lockdown the way that we seem to be doing, I expect those dividends to come latter half of this year or beginning of next year. But of course, there are some companies that aren't allowed to pay. And again, that's a global phenomenon. So the regulator of banks, for example, are saying banks must not pay dividends at the moment. But yeah, life insurance companies, Legal & General, a very good British company, is paying a substantial 7% yield at the moment and is saying it's going to pay that.
So does that leave you in a tricky situation? Because it's not just a simple case of going, oh, all the companies that continue to pay dividends, I'm going to invest in them. You are actually holding on to those that are suspending or cutting in the hope that they're going to come back with bigger payments in the future.
That's right. I think you have to look beyond the dividend cut and say, why is the company doing this? Is it deferring it, or has it not got the money to do it, or is the regulator not allowing them to do it? So, you know, you're investing in those companies that either are paying or have the ability to pay and are just sort of deferring that until a later date.
Okay. Now, we're talking about dividend cuts. I've got to ask you about Shell, because that's surely a company that is not going to be growing its dividend back to its previous level. What was your view of its cut? You know, the first time it's cut the dividend since the Second World War, it's cut by 2/3. It was a shocking event when it happened, and it was the top holding in Claver House at the time.
Yes, it was sort of just a marginal overweight, but it was a surprise, as you say, the first time since the Second World War. But from a cash flow and a balance sheet point of view, I think it was perfectly logical. You know, Shell is more so than most companies at the moment is going through an evolution, going from a sort of carbon heavy company to something so much lighter. And we support them in those efforts. And they've got very clear goals in terms of achieving that, which we support them with. And if cutting the dividend was part of that objective of making it a cleaner, greener energy company, then that gets our full support.
Yes. Now, you've expressed optimism about their ability to you know, reinvest this money that they're not paying out on the dividend to put it into these non-carbon businesses. But realistically, do you think that is something you know, an oil company, an oil giant, a major, can actually realistically do? And isn't there a danger that you know, the transition to a sort of carbon-free world is happening faster than they can keep up with?
Well, I think the dividend cut is a clear indication that management do get that. When they make such a cut, first time since the Second World War, as you say, that to me is an indication that management really do get it. And if they can invest in greener investments and hit those objectives, those quite tough objectives they've set themselves, we will monitor them closely along the way. As shareholders, it's part of our responsibility to hold their feet to the fire and make them accountable to reach those goals. And I think that the company, shareholders and society will be altogether better off if we help them achieve those objectives.
Okay. So you've got faith in their the chance that they have in achieving that. But it's currently, Shell is, according to your latest fact sheet, just over 6% of the trust. That's the second biggest position. Did you sell any shares? Did they make any adjustment after the dividend cut in the holding?
We have kept our weighting in the all set. I'm not sure I can go into the individual, from a compliance point of view, into the individual trading and individual shares, but we remain overweight in the oil sector. I think it's highly likely that BP will cut its dividend. But again, that's priced into the market. BP is ostensibly on a 10% yield. You know, the market is expecting a cut there. And indeed, if you look at the performance of Shell since it's cut its dividend, the market is saying that's the right thing to do because the shares have performed perfectly acceptable since that cut.
Okay. You've got a very blue chip portfolio. You take pride in the fact that 80% or more of the portfolio is in FTSE 100 stocks. Is that a good place to be at the moment? I was wondering whether if there's pressure, clearly big pressure on dividends, you might want to take a wider look and invest across the UK stock market? Or are the FTSE 100 companies the strongest companies and the best dividend payers?
They tend on average to be the stronger companies, the better diversified companies, the more global companies. You know, the UK stock market is sitting on a 30-35% discount valuation-wise to global markets. But those big blue chip companies, the AstraZenecas, the Shell that you mentioned, the Glaxos, the Vodafones, these are international companies. It's an accident of history that they're called UK companies. These are genuinely global. So if you buy into the fact the UK equity market is cheap, 30% discount, and these are global companies, you're effectively buying global equities on a significant discount. And that's the case for really investing in big British blue chip shares at the moment.
Okay. Now, the number of stocks seems to have stayed around the 60 level since end of last year. Have you made any changes during the past months?
We have, because the facts changed. I mean, we bought into the Boris bounce and the clearing of the political skies with the Conservative victory in the election at the end of last year. We had, like it or not, a date for Brexit departure, 31st of January. But then middle or end of February, it became very clear to us this was going to be a global crisis and pandemic, particularly when you had the first death in the States at the end of February. We took the gearing off and we changed the portfolio at the margin away from cyclical stocks or those stocks that were most likely to be hit by this pandemic. So the leisure sector, the travel sector, catering sector and so forth. We reduced those and increased our exposure to more resilient, more robust companies that could get by whatever. So pharmaceutical companies and utility companies to name two. So there were some changes at the margin, but you know, we're still focused on the longer term, and we are seeing now some really good companies at substantially lower share prices that we think will emerge from this crisis in even better shape than they went into it.
Yes. I was just wondering, though, so all the companies in your portfolio, as far as you consider, they are strong, resilient companies. You can't tell what's going to happen in the future, but you're not taking any risks there. You want the strong balance sheet first and foremost. Is that right?
We're taking risks. You have to take risks to get returns. What we're doing as ever as a fund management group is putting the probabilities on our side, on the shareholder side. There are no guarantees at all, not least of which, as I say, we don't know how long this crisis is going to go on for. So we're hoping for the best, but we're stress testing the extremes and we're planning for the worst. And should the worst happen, you know, we think the odds are on our side that we'll be in companies that get through this and as many of their competitors fall by the wayside.
Yeah, can you just give us a bit of insight into your approach to constructing the portfolio and sort of diversification? Because you hold around 60 stocks, so you know if you're looking at the FTSE 100, that means there's quite a few that you're not investing in. So that sounds it's quite a focused portfolio, but at the same time, 60 is quite a lot of stocks. But I'm just wondering, you know, in your addressed to investors at the annual general meeting in April, you highlighted two stocks that you like, Next and Games Workshop. If you like that, but I think I'm right in saying that those positions are around over 1% or so. Is that correct?
Oh, they're more than that. We hold 2.5% in Games Workshop, and we hold 2% in Next. So 4.5% of the portfolio is in those two stocks, both of which are retail stocks.
Okay, you kind of answered my question. I was just wondering, though, if you like them so much, why not hold more? I mean, is there an argument at these times to be more punchy or show more conviction in the companies that you think are going to survive?
Well, it's a pretty focused portfolio, as you say. You know, there are 350 stocks in the 350 index, and we hold just 60 of them. But it's at the same time, we want it to be a risk control portfolio. As you know, at the top end, Gavin, of the UK market there, you know, it's a pretty focused list of some very large companies. And what we don't want is, by not holding those stocks or by holding too much in those stocks, for the portfolio to be knocked off course by just one stock. So we're playing the portfolio effect. And we have to be cognizant that there are some very large stocks in the at the top end there. And so we need a risk control wrapper to help our shareholders through these volatile times without adding too much risk and volatility on top of the underlying equity market risk. So 4.5% in those two stocks, both retail stocks. I mean, you wouldn't think that we'd be in retail stocks in these challenging times, but I think those are two really long-term winners in a challenged sector.
Okay. And I was also wondering, do you dabble at all in other investment companies, particularly those that we might describe as alternative assets, alternative income? Because a lot of our listeners, you know, will be thinking, you know, they're probably heavily invested in equity income funds, but they might look at, for something like Hipgnosis Songs is one that's been in the news this week, had a very positive trading update. You know, that's clearly royalties from pop songs is quite a different area to investing in shares. I'm just using that as an example, but do any of those alternative funds that have sprung up onto the London Stock Exchange in the past 5 years, any of those of interest to you?
We just hold pretty plain blue chip vanilla equities. We try and keep it pretty simple. There are just two investment trusts that we hold, actually, two investment trusts in those 62 stocks that we hold currently. One of them is our in-house investment trust, the JP Morgan UK Smaller Companies Investment Trust, which has got a great long-term record and gives us exposure to the smaller companies in the UK index. And then we hold Scottish Mortgage Trust to give us exposure to tech. And James Allenson, you know, as is well known, is an absolute star in that sector. It's part of our benchmark, and that's how we gain exposure to tech and overseas tech, to go back to your earlier question. You know, Amazon, for example, is James's top holding. So those are the two stocks I would highlight that are perhaps off the more usual beaten track of blue chip UK.
Yeah, that is a very interesting position that you've got in Scottish Mortgage. I'll give you that. And obviously it's performed very well this year and longer than that, in fact. Okay, well, that's just turning then to outlook, to markets. I mean, you know, we've been dwelling on the negative, obviously, but markets have actually rebounded pretty strongly from their March lows. Strong April, people are putting money back into the stock market. Maybe they got time in their hands sitting at home. But with the FTSE All Share, I think is up over 20% since the lows. Some people are feeling a bit queasy about that it's gone too far. We are going into a recession of an uncertain length. What's your feeling?
Well, strategically, I'm still quite cautious, and I think it's right to be prudent. We don't know how long this is going to go on for. The list of things that I and we and, you know, investors generally don't know is still a very long one, too long to be really out and out bullish. So I think it's right still to be cautious, and that's why gearing is down at a slightly lower level than usual, at some 7%. Short term, tactically, Gavin, I think markets have still got a bit more to run. That's why we do have some gearing on, because the sheer size of the stimulus from monetary authorities around the world is making equities a very attractive investment. It's the Fed put. It's underwritten a lot of risk. It's going in and buying junk bonds. And so a lot of the risk in the short term has been taken away. The stimulus from the Fed is twice the size it was in 2008, just to give you an idea. You know, the old adage, don't fight the Fed, I think is going to be true in the short term. But it doesn't, of course, you know, produce a vaccine for the virus. It can only sort of help the symptoms a bit and help asset prices. It doesn't cure the underlying economy. And we're in an environment now where there's lots of negative interest rates around the world, for example. We need to fully work out the consequences of those. So I think it's strategically still right to be prudent, but short-term have some gearing on to catch this tactical bounce.
Okay, well, on that note, perhaps we'll sort of draw a line to it there. Cautious, but watching out for what may come around the corner. When are your next set of results? When's the next update going to be from Clave House?
We're a December year end, so we have a half year at June, and so figures will be out within about 6 weeks of that. So there'll be a half year report out in the late summer.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to reading that when it comes out in due course. In the meantime, William, thanks very much for your time, and very good to talk to you.
My pleasure.